Hello, Star Trek fans, and welcome to the Rebinge Deep Space Nine podcast. My name is Kim.
And my name is James.
And we're watching Star Trek Deep Space Nine from the beginning, one episode at a time. Welcome back to the podcast. Today we are on Season 1, Episode 19, the last episode of the season. It is entitled, In the Hands of Prophets. It aired June 20th, 1993.
Well, we managed to get through an entire season.
I'm surprised. I didn't know if we would make it or not.
It only gets better from now on.
I'm excited to hear that. So before we start, is there anything from the previous podcast you would like to discuss?
Not really. I enjoyed that episode a lot. It's kind of a very heavy subject.
That episode was intense.
Yes.
Especially compared to all of the other episodes around it. All right, well, let's get started.
I am all ready.
On the promenade, Miles is getting one of those giant sweets on a stick from a vendor. It's that thing that Nog always gets. It looks like a popsicle shaped like an upside-down red bell pepper.
And I think we've seen Morn eating one of those as well.
In this episode?
No, in one of the earlier episodes.
Oh, in the past. Okay. He's trying to convince Keiko to try one, but she says it's too early for her and they're so sweet. But Miles says it's a natural sweet from the sap of the Jumja tree, and it's full of vitamin C. And the guy selling them nods in agreement. Keiko is not too interested in it. I have to agree with her. They don't look terribly appetizing.
They look like pieces of formed plastic.
It's nice to know that we're still having some of the exact same conversations 300 years in the future. It's not sugar. It's a natural sugar. Well, anyway, Keiko asks when he became such an expert on Jumja sticks, and he says, Neela told me. Keiko's like, did she? In a suspicious voice. And then she asks if Neela is working out any better than the last one. Miles says, oh, she's terrific. He says she's even taught me a thing or two. And Keiko, with a slightly sarcastic tone, says, oh, I'm glad to hear her expertise doesn't just end with Jumja sticks. Then Miles starts to say she's a really good engineer, but then clues in that maybe Keiko is a little jealous, and he starts to sputter. But she smiles and says, just keeping you on your toes, O'Brien. And everyone laughs. Because jealousy is funny.
Well, I think not this really. Shows Miles probably is difficult to work with. I mean, maybe he's has unrealistically high standards.
Well, he maybe wears them out, too, because I think he's very much a, well, you're not doing it right, let me just do it.
He has to fix everything.
Right. And they probably get tired of that. So Keiko says, be careful who you share your Jumja with. Whatever. This is dumb. Miles continues to suck on his big plastic thing. Then we jump to Keiko teaching, and she's showing a video of a shuttle coming through the wormhole. Then she shows a digital image of the wormhole saying it was discovered by Commander Sisko and Lieutenant Dax earlier this year. She asks the class, what makes the wormhole so unusual? And sweet, very tall Jake raises his hand and says, it's stable? And Keiko says, that's right, it's the first stable wormhole known to exist. Just then the doors open to the classroom and in walks someone in robes that look a little bit purplish when she's way in the back of the classroom. And from this moment, from where she's standing way in the back, her costume looks a lot like Kai Opaka. It's not Kai Opaka, but it looks a lot like her. We know it's not her because we abandoned her in the Gamma Quadrant a couple of episodes ago.
I don't know if abandon's the right word. She chose to stay.
I feel like we abandoned her. Keiko stops and looks at the woman, but doesn't say, who the hell are you? Instead, she just sort of looks at her, but the woman kind of waves her hand saying, please continue. So Keiko then talks about what a stable wormhole is, blah, 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 sciencey stuff. She says the reason it's stable is because it was artificially constructed and Commander Sisko encountered the entities who created it. The purplish nun interrupts Keiko, and you knew this was coming,
yeah.
Saying, by entities, don't you mean the prophets? And Keiko says, yes, the entities are worshipped as prophets on Bajor. When Keiko talks about ships moving through the wormhole safely, the nun interrupts her again and says, ships are guided safely through the wormhole by the prophets. In a manner of speaking, Keiko says, but not apparently in your manner of speaking, the immediately unpleasant woman says. Now we get a closer look at her costume, and it is another one of those high-quality costumes. It's not so much purple on a closer look. It's really more of a deep maroon, and she's got red and royal blue accents.
Oh, yeah, that's a very nice costume.
I would say at this point, when you get a closer-up look at her, she has a bit of a condescending look on her face, and
yeah.
I immediately miss Kai Opaka and Naomi Osaka. Because that is not who this is.
And the headgear as well is like a three-layered peak.
Yeah, it really looks like the Sydney Opera House.
That's very true.
It's very architectural.
Yeah.
And it's so tall. It's like as big as her head. It's amazing. Keiko suggests maybe we can discuss this after class, but the unpleasant nun presses on with, do you believe the Celestial Temple of the Prophets exists within the passage? Keiko says she respects that the Bajoran people believe that it does. The Maroon Nun, this is her name until we hear her actual name, Anyway, the maroon nun sighs and says, but that's not what you teach. No, Keiko says, I don't teach Bajoran spiritual beliefs. That's your job. Mine is to open the children's mind to history, to literature, to mathematics, to science. You are opening the children's minds to blasphemy, the maroon nun says.
Boom.
And I cannot permit it to continue. That took quite a turn.
Yeah, really fast. That went downhill.
Yeah.
And Keiko seemed pretty annoyed at her with the exchange. That's your job to teach the religious aspect.
Keiko just can't catch a break. She's just trying to find something to do with her brain on this pile of crap station. And something goes
wrong.
You
still haven't let up on
time.
Beating up on the poor station, have you?
Well, because it's broken all the time.
Miles has almost got it fixed.
Does he? Anyway, at this point, the music swells into the theme song. I think we knew this was the kind of issue that was going to come up in a school crossing so many different cultures and histories. I mean, what history do you even teach in this scenario? It's not like you can learn the history of 1,000 planets. It can be tough to learn the history of even a single country.
And plus, remember, a lot of history also depends on the perspective of the person actually writing it.
For sure. And now you've got Keiko as a member of the Federation sort of dropped in the middle of this.
Yeah.
How is she even going to know what parts of Bajoran history to teach? I was always concerned about the curriculum at the school. I think if you went back and listened to the episode where the school started.
Yeah, well, it would be so difficult. I mean, not just the Bajorans, but surely some of the other races maybe have strong religious beliefs or convictions, or are completely the opposite. They're super atheists, and even the suggestion of God is insulting to their entire culture. Wouldn't it have been something you would want to have established beforehand?
Right.
Especially seeing as you know how much of a strong religious element exists on Bajor.
Well, I feel like Keiko thinks she has established it by staying away from it.
Yeah.
The trouble is with this particular religion, science is mixed together with their religion because of the existence of the so-called prophets or the wormhole entities.
That's true. That would make it significantly more difficult. The
gods
are real.
Yeah, exactly. Also, let's talk about the fact that we have another high-powered guest star.
Oh, right.
Yeah, this character, not yet named in the show, is played by Louise Fletcher. Her IMDb list is very long, like all of the guest stars on this show, and it includes maybe her most recognizable part of Nurse Ratched from One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, which she won an Oscar for and a Golden Globe as well.
That's just crazy, isn't it?
Yeah.
You've got the guest stars are Oscar winners.
She's the first guest star Oscar winner.
Yep.
Don't forget, we had an Oscar winner on Next Gen.
Who was that?
Whoopi.
Oh, gosh.
Anyway, I continue to be impressed with the quality of guest stars. My only concern here is this woman is scary. She's been in this episode for 3 minutes, and she's scaring me.
Yes, she has an absolute presence.
After the theme song, Miles enters the security office where a Bajoran woman in a lavender uniform is fixing something. He asks how it's going, and she says, done. Miles is surprised that Neela is so confident and competent, and he starts asking her sciencey questions like, did you remember to reinitialize the isolinear coprocessor? The woman says, I did it exactly like you showed me.
Miles is impressed.
So he tests whatever it is that he's supposed to test, and he says, not bad at all. If you keep this up, I'll be out of a job. He should want that. You go fix everything, and I'll hang out in quarks. Somebody please teach Miles the benefits of delegation, because that's not happening yet. They close up the panel, and she grabs a tool to seal it, but Miles says that panel requires a security seal, which takes a special tool called an EJ-7 interlock to secure it. He opens his handy toolbox, and he discovers the EJ-7 is missing. He is alarmed. He said he had it yesterday. She suggests maybe he left it in ops, but he says he doesn't misplace his tools, which I believe. Oh, and he also gets in his bloody hell line when he sees that it's missing. He pretty much gets that into every episode.
You know Miles is going to know all of his tools, and I will put money on Miles having named them.
Probably. This is also time to be worried if the tool that can open security seals is missing, because like always, this place is riddled with security issues.
Yeah.
Most of which seem like basic solvable problems, but if this tool opens up security seals, where is he keeping it at night?
Yes.
How did somebody actually get it?
Yes. Why isn't it in some kind of secured location that you can't get at without checking it in or out?
As we learned in Captive Pursuit, you just go to the computer and you say, computer, where are the secret tools? Oh, and then you just go and get it. Super easy. So now we go to Sisko's office where Keiko is filling Sisko in on what happened with the scary maroon nun. Sisko isn't really surprised this happened, saying a confrontation like this was inevitable.
Really? Sisko's words, I'm not exactly surprised. Well, why didn't you guys plan for it?
Why didn't you at least talk about it?
Yeah.
Well, then he invites Kira in to discuss the classroom incident. She's already heard about it, and she's heard that Vedic Wynn, that's the woman's name, has been meeting with some of the Bajoran civilians about it. And Sisko asks what she knows about Wynn. Kira says that she's from an Orthodox order. She says that Vedic Wynn has some support to become the next Kai, probably not enough, Keiko asks, how much support does she have on the station? And Kira says, well, she has mine. Of course, we have to get a little conflict going within the ranks. This is a common thing on this show, right? Oh, yeah. Keiko says, you can't possibly believe that teaching the facts about the wormhole amounts to blasphemy. Kira says, well, some adjustments to the curriculum might be appropriate since you teach a lot of Bajoran children. Then Keiko goes into indignant mode. I'm not going to let a Bajoran spiritual leader dictate what can or can't be taught in my classroom. I wish they would do a better job of fleshing Keiko out a little bit more, yeah. You know, into a well-rounded person. She doesn't have a lot of depth to her, but then again, it's taking a while to build what all the main characters have, and, you know, and she's barely in it. She's just sort of here and there. But she could have been a much better character rather than just there to give O'Brien a spouse.
Yeah. Well, I think what they're doing is to cast Keiko as kind of the opposite to Win, this orthodox religious figure.
Yeah.
And Keiko is like a cutout for a Federation. Science is the answer. Science is my belief.
I do understand that. And you've got to get the conflict right in the story. And I think that makes a lot of sense. But I just feel like sometimes we drop Keiko in to create a conflict.
Gotcha.
And so it ends up making her not terribly likable as a character, which is sort of a bummer.
Yeah. I thought it was a bit of a bombshell here from Kira. We'd known that Kira was devout towards the Bajoran religion, but I don't think we'd ever established that Kira was that much of a follower.
Well, Kira proposes that maybe we need two schools on the station, one for the Bajoran children and one for the Federation. And this is why you keep religion out of school, right? But you know, I mean, we do have religious schools that are separate from public schools, so this isn't a completely outlandish idea. Sisko doesn't like the sound of it because he's trying hard to unite the Federation and Bajor, and he wonders why spiritual teachings can't be done in addition to what Mrs. O'Brien is teaching. And Kira says, well, no, not if she's teaching a fundamentally different philosophy. And Sisko is getting annoyed. He says, there's room for all philosophies on this station. Now, how do you suggest that we deal with this? And Kira says, I'm not sure you can. Which is not good.
This is the second bombshell, I think. Kira does spell out that some of their interests are different. I think we saw some of that with the Federation's attitude to occupation crimes, where, to be honest, I thought their attitude was kind of meh.
Blasé.
Yeah. And this I found kind of annoying because I don't think it fits with the character of Sisko that we've seen. So he doesn't strike me as someone who would ignore these things. So I think to make the drama in this episode, they've sacrificed some of Sisko's character that we've seen being built up.
Well, to some degree, you have to. I think in real life, you can't be, I feel like I've said this in the past couple of weeks, but you can't be outraged about everything all the time.
Yeah.
You have to sometimes just focus on problems that you can work on or focus on the problem that's in front of you and try to get through them.
Yeah.
That's part of my answer here, but the other part of it is it's also a TV show, so you know, we have to bring up the big topic every week, and then that's the big topic, even though maybe we never thought about it before.
I will say, I thought the expanding of a little bit more insight into Kira's thinking and her religious conviction, I thought was great. I really liked that.
Yeah, it was really interesting. Although, if you notice, even in this whole episode, she never actually says anything spiritual. They're very careful in the show not to say religious. They say spiritual instead of religious. Sisko enters what appears to be a small temple or chapel, which just seems to be another door off the promenade. Inside the chapel, we see the maroon nun, now known as Vedic Wynn. Her face is overlooking or kind of leaning into some incense that's coming out in little puffs of smoke from a big gold container.
You just get a bad vibe from Vedic Wynn already.
I'm telling you, she's scary.
The way they've lit it or shot that scene, it's really nicely done.
Definitely. Without turning around, she says, I can't tell you how much I've looked forward to this moment. Then she turns towards him, saying, I'm honored to meet the emissary to the prophets. He says, if you'd let me know you were coming, I would have greeted you sooner. But she says she didn't wish to bother him with her insignificant visit.
Oh.
False humility, I'm sure. And she calls him emissary again. And he says, I wish you wouldn't call me that. And Vedic Wynn says, but you are the emissary. Don't you know the cherished place you have earned in the Bajoran spiritual life? When he indicates he's not really comfortable in that role, she says, the course the prophets choose for us may not always be comfortable, but we must follow it. She walks up to him and puts her hand up toward his ear.
Uh-oh, more ear grabbing.
Well, she says, may I? Before touching his ear, which makes a nice change. But he never says yes, and she grabs his ear anyway. These people. Anyway, she kind of smiles and says, still the disbeliever. I noticed at this point, he just moved right on to, I want to solve the problem with the school. And she says, the prophets have spoken to me through the orbs, emissary. It's my duty to defend the Bajoran faith. The teacher has dishonored the celestial temple. If she does not recant, I cannot be responsible for the consequences.
Oh.
It's like, man, that sounds like a threat. And it's virtually impossible to argue with someone who says, oh, God told me it's okay to do this thing.
Yeah.
You know, there's no comeback to it.
That should be a red flag right there. Direct line to the prophet. Really?
Yeah, for sure. I was also wondering, did this actress ever play anything non-threatening? Because she's so good at being threatening.
Oh, yeah. In an understated way. Not being a physically large person.
No.
She projects this ominous tone. And the way she says things is very threatening.
Absolutely.
The way I interpreted this was, I didn't tell them to burn the unbeliever at the stake. I just said unbelievers should be burned at the stake, and they did it.
It's like, it's what the prophets wanted. I mean, I didn't have anything to do with it.
Yeah. And I think as well, that's why Sisko kind of didn't react to a lot of her things.
Yeah.
I'm going to assume that Sisko picked up immediately. She was a religious opportunist. He knew what he was dealing with.
All right, now we go to Miles. He's with his new engineer. They come into ops and they're on the hunt for Miles' tool because he says, with that tool, someone could access every critical system on the station.
I thought you could just access every system on the station by plugging into one of the open Ethernet ports like Vantika did.
Neela is wondering why he's making such a big fuss over a tool. Why are we never suspicious of new people and their motives? Maybe we're too trusting in Starfleet, I guess. Hey. So then Dax speaks up and asks if anyone has seen Ensign Aquino lately. Who's Ensign Aquino? Who knows? We've never heard of him. It's the first time we've heard the name. But apparently he didn't report for duty, and the computer says he's not on the station, yet he didn't log out. Miles suggests that she talk to Odo. Then he and Neela run a scan for Tritanium sources in an effort to find Miles' missing tool. Then they see something in a power conduit on level 12, section 8. Miles tells the computer to shut down that conduit and reroute the power flow, and they head off to check that out. In the conduit, they find what I can only describe as a pile of goo, which Miles says is the same material as his tool. Neela says it must have been melted by the plasma flow. Miles says that still doesn't explain how it got here in the first place. Then his tricorder starts beeping and he says, hey, I'm picking up traces of organic material. And they decide to take a sample for Dr. Bashir.
Yeah, you know something's up at this point.
Well, yeah, obviously we mentioned Ensign Aquino for some reason.
And then organic residue.
Miles is walking with Keiko and tells her that Ensign Aquino made a log entry the night he disappeared about some sort of plasma flow irregularity in the conduit. He indicated he was going to fix it. And Keiko says, so it was an accident? And Miles is like, I guess so. Dr. Bashir was able to confirm that the remains were human. They approach that giant popsicle stand again, and Miles orders his Jumja stick, but the Bajoran dude, who was smiling in the opening scene, is now not smiling, and he says, sorry, we're all out, even though he has an entire tray of them right in front of him on the stand. He stares at Keiko and says, these aren't for sale. Miles grabs the guy by the collar just as Odo approaches, asking if there's a problem. Miles says, damn right there's a problem. But the Bajoran guy points at them and says, I don't have to sell anything to them if I don't want to. And Odo says, why wouldn't you want to? I thought that was really funny. Then Miles threatens to punch the guy, but Keiko grabs his arm and says, can we go? And drags him off. The guy shouts after them, seek the prophets. And Miles shouts back, I'll seek you. There are a lot of people on the promenade today. I think we upped the budget a bit for the finale. Did you notice? It was always just full of people every scene.
Yeah, definitely. They brought in a few more extras.
Yeah. As they're walking away, and I feel bad for Miles that he can't have his popsicle because, you know, if you really want something, that's a bummer.
Yep.
But Miles says, maybe you're right. Maybe we have no business being here. I'll put in for a transfer. I love that he can't get his popsicle and he's ready to get out of there. He's going to change his whole career. I love that. I thought that was great.
Your wife's not happy there, doesn't have a job.
Get you're out. Staying. That's right.
Can't get a popsicle. We're leaving.
I totally can relate to that. But Keiko doesn't want to run away from it. At the same time, he's probably also like, I don't want to deal with zealots. That's terrible. That's no fun. It can be dangerous.
Yeah. In this scene, in the background, when somebody is walking and talking, there is Morn. Did you notice he was talking to what looked like a large version of Dobby?
No.
That alien looked like it was inspired by elf? Dobby from the Harry Potter movies.
Well, other way around, because Dobby would come much later. Well, the next problem happens immediately as we find Scary Wynn, that's her new name to me,
Scary
in
Wynn.
The entrance to the school, talking to the group of school kids and many of their parents. But she pauses when she sees Keiko saying, oh, here's Mrs. O'Brien now. And they all turn and look at Keiko and Miles. She tells Miles it's nice to meet him and says she's been hearing many wonderful things about his wife as some of the Bajorans around her nod. She's apparently an excellent teacher. And I wrote down, oh, when the evil ones smile, it's really scary.
Oh, yeah. There's sort of a very disingenuous tone.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. Miles says she is an excellent teacher and she doesn't deserve what you're doing to her. I feel your anger towards me, Scary Wynn says, and I forgive you for it. She says, Mrs. O'Brien, if I've misjudged you, I am terribly sorry. Is there a place in your school for the prophets? No, Keiko says. I love this. She doesn't even think about it. No.
Wynn is just so condescendingly creepy. It's terrible. It just makes your skin crawl.
Scary Wynn says, by the way, that's who she's called in the rest of my notes. Scary Wynn, that's what I typed every time. I don't think I typed Vedic very many times. Scary Wynn says, I admire you for standing by your convictions, even though I disagree with them. Then all of the parents start murmuring and whispering to each other. Please believe that I want to find a way to allow these children to stay in your school. Let me be the one to make the first concession. I will no longer request that you teach anything about the Celestial Temple. Just don't teach anything about the wormhole at all. Ignore it, Keiko says. But what about when we get to the theories of evolution or creation of the universe? What then? We'll face those issues when we come to them, Scary Wynn says. And this whole time she has her hands on the shoulders of one of the kids. And that kid looks like he wants to get away from her as quickly as possible. Like, what is happening?
Yeah.
Keiko says that it's her responsibility to expose her students to knowledge, not hide it from them. And the murmuring increases. Scary Wynn knows how to stir up a crowd.
Oh, yeah.
She says, well, I've tried to be reasonable. And she walks down the steps of the classroom and all of the kids and parents leave with her. Well, the Bajoran kids. There's still four remaining kids plus Jake, who is twice as tall as these other kids. But I guess these are all of the non-Bajorans.
I assume these are the children of the godless pagans or heretics.
Well, they're the children of people from the Federation, I think, is the implication.
Ah.
I'm surprised that all of the Bajorans would go along with this. I mean, you've always got somebody in a group who has different ideas. Yeah. Is there only one religion on the entire planet of Bajor or in the entire system?
And not even factions within it?
That's what I'm wondering. Why would they all leave with her?
Yeah, that is very true. I mean, surely they'd be like the Bajoran equivalent of Protestants standing there going, nope, off you go.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah.
But then also maybe she was playing this sort of like the nationality card.
Mixing religion with nationalism.
Yeah.
Kira said how the religion was a rallying point in the fight against the Cardassians.
Right.
Plus, it was also used when Kaio Parker helped the provisional government trying to bring some unity. So yeah. I'm guessing they are very unified in their religion.
Interesting.
Surprisingly.
Yeah. Very non-human.
Yeah. Yes. I think the final thing in this is anytime anyone says, I tried to be reasonable, usually means they're not.
Yeah, I thought that was really funny. Well, the whole thing was disingenuous.
Oh, yeah.
I will make the first concession, and my concession is you won't teach about this. Oh, yeah. Well, I tried to be reasonable. Yeah, she's sneaky. She probably would win a lot of debates in school. Now the main crew is in ops, and Sisko is wondering why, if Akino turned off the plasma flow to fix the relay, it reactivated and then killed him. Miles says the Cardassians only equip those conduits with a single flow regulator per level. So the computer could have just realigned it and then turned it back on when he was in there messing around and then caught him inside.
Doesn't sound like they have great security protocols on the station.
Oh, shocking.
Oh, I turned it off. Nope. Flip back on.
Well, remember when the computer would argue with Miles? Maybe the person told the computer to turn it off and then it did. And then it went, I'm going to turn it back on. Miles doesn't sound entirely convinced, and he says, it all adds up, but he borrowed one of my tools without asking. He's really stuck on this. Nobody but Miles seems to think that this is weird. And Kira says, it was 4 a.m. Maybe he didn't want to disturb you. He says, Akino was a Starfleet engineer, and you don't take a chief's tools without asking. It's unheard of.
That is actually a pretty valid thing. Usually you don't borrow someone's tools in a professional environment without asking them. That really is something that's drummed into the apprentices at an early age.
Don't take the tools.
Yeah.
This was also a pretty big clue that the first watch, maybe you don't pick up, because he does say a Starfleet engineer wouldn't take the chief's tools. And if you're listening, you might go, oh, but maybe a Bajoran engineer?
Oh.
It's a big clue.
Do you think
that's
a bit of a dig or an unconscious dig?
No. Maybe. An unconscious bias? Maybe. But no, I was thinking of it more like Miles was just saying, we have protocols that if you went to that academy, this is a thing you would be trained on. And if you didn't, you might not have paid as close of attention to that, or you might not know that. You know, I always try to think the best of people, except for scary nuns and Cardassians. Oh, and Ferengi.
Ferengi is completely justified, even if it is fake news about them.
Anyway, this does get Odo's attention, and he asks if Miles is suggesting it might not have been an accident. Miles doesn't really know what he's suggesting, but he knows that he should have asked for permission. He is really stuck on that tool thing.
Yeah.
Sisko calls Odo constable again. Why do we still do that? Odo has told everybody he hates it, and we still keep doing it. This annoys me. Sisko tells him to look into it, and he dismisses everyone just as Jake comes up the elevator in his blue and purple outfit.
The way that Odo suddenly becomes interested in the whole thing. Yeah. I mean, it was a great little scene. The way he sort of, like, the body language changes. Suddenly he's suspicious.
Murder, She Wrote, the Odo edition.
Exactly.
They could have done that show.
Oh, that would have been a good one.
Yeah.
Deep Space Nine Justice.
No, I'd want a cozy murder, though, not not a Law and Order grim thing. It's Star Trek. So Sisko and Jake walk up the stairs into his office, and he tells Jake that he heard about what happened at school. Jake says Mrs. O'Brien kept the school open even though there were only four kids there, plus him. Where's Nog, by the way? He wasn't even in this episode. She changed the lesson to be about Galileo and how he was tried by the Inquisition for teaching that the Earth moved around the sun. Maybe a little bit on the nose there, Keiko.
Yes.
Well, it's like she feels immediately persecuted, and she goes to her own historical reference about it in Galileo.
And I like that.
I just thought that was very on the nose.
Yeah.
Well, Sisko finishes the story for Jake by saying he was tried and convicted, and his books were burned. This show sometimes, I mean, we go from Goofy to the Inquisition. It just cracks me up.
Yes.
Jake asks, how could anyone be so stupid? And Sisko says, it's easy to look back 7 centuries and judge what was right and wrong. Jake sees that the exact same thing is happening now with all of the stuff about the Celestial Temple and the wormhole. He says it's dumb. Sisko says it's not dumb. And I sense the lesson of this episode is approaching. For over 50 years, the one thing that allowed the Bajorans to survive the Cardassian occupation was their faith. The prophets were their only source of hope and courage. Jake says, but there were no prophets. They're just the aliens that you found in the wormhole. But Sisko reminds him that to those aliens, the future is no more difficult to see than the past. Why shouldn't they be considered prophets? And Jake says, are you serious? And Sisko says, it's a matter of interpretation. It may not be what you believe, but that doesn't make it wrong. He says, if you start to think that way, then you'll be acting just like Vedic Wynn. We can't afford to think that way or we'd lose everything we've worked for here. He's so wise.
This was great. This shows the level of understanding that Sisko has of the situation he's in, of the Bajorans, and his ability to see both sides. I thought the honesty here was astounding. It fitted with Sisko so well.
Yeah.
I thought it was a powerful scene, but it was not being preachy.
I think that it's really cool that he's dealing with the situation this way, that even in the middle of not really knowing what he should do or how he's going to resolve this problem, he sits down with his kid and he helps him understand both sides. I mean, that's kind of amazing, right?
Yes.
I mean, it's just good parenting, I guess, right? But also, it tells me that yet again, there are probably some very good leadership classes at Starfleet. That's what I'm thinking. I'd like to take one of those classes. Jake asks if he's worried, and he nods that he is. He grabs Jake's hand, and he leans back in his chair, and Jake asks what he's going to do. But Sisko isn't sure. He knows that he needs to find some help. And I thought maybe he could fly back to that crazy prison planet and get Kaiopaka. I bet she could help.
Yeah, get her to record something.
Yeah, take a video.
I do like the way Sisko grabs Jake's hand in that scene. Yeah. The father and son relationship between these two comes off as such a real thing.
It's really the most natural feeling relationship.
Yes.
Now we go down to Bajor, and Sisko is standing in a very green garden, throwing rocks into a small pool.
A small Vedic comes out and shouts, "Stop throwing rocks in the celestial pool!"
What?
Were you thinking that?
No. Why?
I'm thinking, maybe you shouldn't be throwing rocks in that pool.
Well, a man in a very plain orange robe does come out, and he says he's sorry that he kept the commander waiting. His robes are not nearly as impressive as Evil Wynn's or as Kaiopaka's. Sisko calls this dude Vedic Barail, and he kind of leans his head down, but Barail says it's not necessary. And Sisko says, usually when I meet a Bajoran spiritual leader, the first thing they do is grab my ear. And this guy kind of laughs, and he's like, it's unpleasant, isn't it? And Sisko says, I've been far too polite to admit it. Finally, yay!
Oh, I think we're shown here that he's one of those new age Vedics.
Barail says he was 5 the first time one of the monks grabbed his ear. This is just taking on a weird tone at this point. He was a stern old crow who could virtually squeeze the paw out of you. We haven't heard the word paw since episode 1. He said he swore one of his life goals would be to do away with that archaic ritual. And Sisko says, well, you can count on the Federation's support. And mine. I'm totally in favor of this. Stop with the ears. Then they talk about plants, and Barail mentions that he's been listening to 112 Vedics all talking at once, and he needs some peace. And as he's planting something, he says, I understand my friend Vedic Wynn has brought her blessings to your station. which he seems to say without any hint of sarcasm.
Yeah.
Sisko is here to ask for an audience with the Assembly so he could discuss the school issue with them. He knows that Baral is the leading candidate to become the next Kai, and he knows his ideology differs from Evil Wind, so he's looking for Baral's help. And Baral says, I'm sorry, the Vedic Assembly will not see you. Then he explains that some fear Sisko as the symbol of the godless federation, and some fear him as the emissary who walked with the prophets, and some just fear him because Vedic Wind told them to. Interesting.
I think that speaks of the power of Wind, certainly within this assembly.
And then he says that he's only a Vedic now, and if the prophets will it, someday he may be Kai, and then he can be a better friend to Sisko. And Sisko realizes that it's a political move, and if he appears to align himself with the Federation at this point, it will hurt his chances of becoming Kai. Then he tells Sisko he can enjoy the gardens for as long as he'd like, and then he leaves. Sisko kind of waves his hand with this frustrated shrug.
I think this scene clearly shows how politics works its way into the Bajoran religion. When Vedic Baal says, the prophets teach us patience, and that Sisko replies with, it appears they also teach you politics.
Yeah, it was a pretty good line.
Very good line. And I think there's a deliberate contrast here between Wyn and Baal. His dress style, he's just wearing robes. He doesn't have the headpiece. Yep. He's not showing off, as it were, his religious position. He just looks like a dude in a robe.
It's also, of course, possible that's part of the politics, that he's trying to look more humble.
Yeah.
But yes, exactly. It is a stark contrast.
Yeah, nice touch.
We go back to the station, and Sisko enters ops. He points out that the room is a bit empty today, and Kira says, three Bajoran crewmen didn't report for duty. They said they weren't feeling well. Sisko asks if it's contagious, and I thought, you know, we already had that episode where everything was contagious. But anyway, she says it's too early to tell. And Sisko kind of moves around her quietly and asks, are your people willing to throw away everything we've accomplished in the past 7 months? She says everyone knows that if the Federation leaves, the Cardassians would be back. And Sisko's like, with all due respect, Major, protecting your borders is not the primary reason the Federation is here, and it's not why I'm here. I'm here to build a trusting relationship with your people, and I'd like to start feeling that somebody on your side is giving something back to that effort. She starts to respond that she's been supportive, but he cuts her off and says, it's not enough. Just then, Neela and Miles enter on the second level of ops. They hear Sisko raise his voice a little at the end of that sentence. Kira says, I thought there was room for all philosophies on this station. He says, you tell the sick Bajoran crewmen they better get well immediately or they'll recover on their way to their next assignment. She says, yes, sir, and leaves. She's missing the point that he's trying to separate work from the philosophy and allow it to happen on the station, but not, you know, not on duty.
It seemed odd to me initially that Sisko would almost dress her down in public like that.
Yeah.
But then I thought this actually is more of a military discipline aspect. So I thought that made more sense if you look at it as he needs to show the military chain of command. And although it seemed kind of clumsy, I thought that it was excusable in that situation.
So Bashir and Odo come up the elevator as Kira is stomping off, and Bashir has finally managed to reconstruct the victim's DNA from the pile of goo they found in the conduit. It's definitely Akino, but the power flow in the conduit didn't kill him. Somebody shot him with a phaser. Dun, dun, dun.
So definitely something is going on.
Yep. Now we're in Sisko's office, and everyone is lined up at Sisko's desk, like in front of him, and they're all sort of crammed together. It was a very weird scene.
Yes.
He asks if this could be related to the school issue, and Kira, on brand, can't believe he would suggest that a Bajoran would kill someone just for being a member of the Federation.
She's very defensive here. It must be terrible for her loyalties, though. Where does she stand?
Well, Bashir stops the argument anyway before it happens, because Akino was killed the night before Evil Wyn even arrived, so it doesn't matter.
Oh, maybe he was a sacrifice to bring Evil Wyn to the station.
Well, maybe.
You want to bring a demon onto the station, you have to sacrifice a crewman first.
Oh, funny. Well, then what's the motive? Sisko asks, but nobody has any idea. Odo doesn't really believe the log. He thinks the killer may have altered the log to throw off the trail. He checked the turbo lift records that night, and Akino did take a lift to level 3, but not to the power conduit. He took it to runabout pad C, and Miles asks, what was he doing on runabout C at 4 a.m.? And Odo says, getting murdered. This is what I mean. We could do a cozy murder.
Apparently, getting murdered. Oh, Odo.
I think they should check the alibi of the popsicle guy. He seemed pretty shady.
Oh, yeah. Odo must be pleased. It now turns into a murder investigation. He's got to be loving this.
Miles and his new engineer, who at this point in my first watch, I was suspicious of because she's new and everyone else should be suspicious of anything that's new because everything new on this show is deadly.
Usually.
Anyway, they're looking over the runabout. This is runabout C, and they're not finding anything interesting. Miles is frustrated and she asks if he knew Aquino well, and Miles says barely at all. She said she didn't really know him either. Bajoran and Starfleet officers don't really socialize much, which is kind of sad and depressing because work teams are the best. She says, we just keep to ourselves, but not with Miles because he's not like the others. This makes Miles a little uncomfortable, but she says, you know, you don't put on any airs. You're just nicer.
Working man Miles, that's
Miles why. Kind of smiles awkwardly and says, he'll close up and she can take off. She says goodnight and leaves, kind of looking back at him. Then Miles says, on your toes, O'Brien. I guess he's thinking she has a crush on him, or it's entirely possible that she just likes that he's nice and treats her like an engineer, which is really all that any of us are ever asking for. This annoyed me.
Really?
Yeah. She wasn't hitting on him. She was making no move on him. She just said, oh, we get along because you're nice, you don't put on airs, you don't act like a hoity-toity Starfleet person, and you just let me be an engineer.
Yeah.
That's the way that I heard it. And then he was like, oh, I think she might want me. I'm just like, oh my God, this show.
Well, there's a few additional comments I can actually make on this scene. The first one was, if you notice, when Miles wants to run the level one diagnostic, she says she's already done it and that everything's normal. Did you think she really did it, or she just told Miles she had?
Oh, she just told Miles she had.
Yeah. Do you think that she was being deliberately friendly to Miles to throw him off balance deliberately?
I guess I didn't think so.
What I was wondering about the Miles thing, whether she was giving that hint of maybe she was interested in him or liked him more than just a colleague to throw him off balance deliberately.
Maybe.
The thing that annoyed me in this scene is Sisko is on this station to forge links with the Bajorans and find common ground with them and bring him to Federation. Why would you not be making Starfleet officers have cultural exchange with the Bajorans?
Team building.
Getting the people together. This seemed to be clunky writing, moving the goalposts, moving back some of the things we've learned about Sisko just to create this storyline and hint at conflict. That didn't work. I could take the 100% cynical view here and say, so this is a dumping ground for all the F-Troop Starfleet people.
Yeah. Including Miles.
Oh.
On the promenade, a brightly dressed group of Bajorans arrives. They're all kind of dressed the same. They've got green pants and red vests and colorful sweaters under the vests. Odo is sitting at a table, I think, on the edge of Quark's. And Quark asks if there's a Bajoran convention happening, which is cute. And Odo says it's not a convention. They're from an Orthodox spiritual order, here to support Evil Wyn and her efforts to keep the Bajoran children out of the school. But Odo wants to talk about something else. He wants to know what Quark knows about the murder of Ensign Aquino. And Quark says, I'm not a killer. And Odo says, no, but most of your friends are.
That's been very true so far.
Well, then Quark says, true, but unfortunately, none of them have taken credit for the death of the Starfleet officer.
I guess it would make business sense for Quark to sell someone out because it could make profit from it if there's a reward. And also, it might give him some slack with Odo.
Yes, and I think we've seen Quark go into grovel mode very easily and very frequently. So I think when he does that, he would sell out anyone anytime. And also, I think he would like to have some favors to call in. So,
Yeah, definitely.
So Odo says, keep your ears open. And Quark says, well, that's the seventh rule of acquisition. So then Miles arrives and Quark leaves. Miles hands Odo a little device and says he found a security bypass module, an exceedingly common thing on the station.
Yeah, they're everywhere.
Odo figures he found it on Pad C, but Miles says, no, he found it when running a station-wide diagnostic, which according to other things on the show would have taken hours to run, but apparently it happened quickly. Then this turned up on Pad A, not C. Miles says it makes no sense, but Odo says it makes perfect sense. Ensign Aquino goes to runabout C because some sensor shows an anomaly, and he interrupts whoever is tampering with it, and he's killed. The killer puts his body in the conduit, and then rather than going back to Pad C, which Ensign Aquino's log would reveal, he changes his plan and moves to Pad A. But what was the plan, Miles wonders. I'm guessing somebody wanted to steal a runabout. So he goes through a lot of trouble to defeat the security net, and then he doesn't go through with it. But we're interrupted by an explosion in the direction of the school. They take off running to the school, but when they get there, it's just a big fireball. Miles takes a step towards it, but fire blasts out at him. He keeps shouting Keiko and running toward the fire, but Odo holds him back. Keiko runs up behind them shouting for Miles, so she wasn't inside and she's fine. Some Bajoran crew members put out the fire as we head into an ad break.
And if you notice, Morn was in the background there. Anytime there's a good mob, Morn has to be part of it.
Morn, he joins the mob pretty quickly.
Oh, yeah.
Also, an explosion on a space station is very dangerous. You could kill everyone on the station, including yourself, if you're setting off bombs.
Yeah, what happens if it blows out a back wall and straight into the vacuum of space?
Exactly. After the ad break, we're in the blown-out classroom. Kira tells Sisko that she found traces of common explosives easily obtained. So Odo says we're looking at a simple homemade bomb. Some murmuring happens outside the blast zone as there's a bit of a crowd forming. Although, I don't know why a crowd forms around an explosion. Wouldn't you be worried about more violence?
Yeah.
Yeah. Plus, you don't even know right now, I guess, if you're just a person standing in the crowd, if somebody did that, or if there's maybe some kind of a fault in the station. I mean, again, should we be evacuating? That's a question we ask in nearly every episode. Should we be getting out of here?
Things blowing up on the station, there probably is going to be a few more by the end of the episode.
All right. Sisko, Kira, Odo, and Neela head out to see what the fuss is about. Evil Wyn is approaching, pushing her way through the crowd. She asks Sisko where Mrs. O'Brien is, and Sisko tells her she's safe. Oh, the prophets have been kind today. The prophets had nothing to do with what happened here today, Sisko says.
She's so disingenuous.
This was the work of a disturbed and violent mind who listens to your voice and not the prophets. Neela is suspiciously in frame over the shoulder of Evil Wyn, and Evil Wyn is asking, is the emissary holding me responsible for this act of terrorism? The commander of the station is, he says very pointedly. May the prophets forgive you for abandoning them, she says. She is a nightmare.
Oh, yeah.
Using the spiritual nature of her people to manipulate them and gain power? She's gross.
Oh, definitely.
Sisko says, you claim the prophets as your personal constituency. I'm not convinced that's justified. Who do you speak for? An order that's barely listened to in your assembly? He's starting to get angry.
Yeah.
So you come here looking for a more receptive audience. I mean, where did that info come from?
Maybe that came from when he was talking to Beryl. Maybe there was a cut scene or something from the episode.
Oh, maybe.
We learned some more about it and they had to cut it out for time concerns.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
She asks if that's what his friend, Vedic Beryl, told him. She says, he's as misguided as you are. No, that's not fair. You are not simply misguided, as I once thought. Now I see you want nothing less than to destroy us. And Sisko sort of smiles and he crosses his arms and he says, destroy you? You live without a soul, Commander. You and your Federation exist in a universe of darkness, and you will drag us in there with you. But we will not go. Such drama.
Oh, yeah.
You have made your first mistake, Sisko says. Have I? She's looking pretty confident.
Yeah.
But Sisko then starts his own speech. The Bajorans who have lived with us on this station, who have worked with us for months, have begun to build the future of Bajor with us. These people know that we are neither the enemy nor the devil. Sisko looks at Kira as he says, we don't always agree, which was cute, but we always come away from the disagreements with a little better understanding and appreciation of each other. You won't succeed here. The school will reopen, and when your rhetoric gets old, the Bajoran parents will bring their children back. We'll see, she says.
Oh.
Sisko stomps off in one direction. Kira stomps off in another direction. And Neela stands there looking at Evil Wyn, who gives her a slight nod. And now we know she's up to something.
Divided loyalties, perhaps?
I don't think they're divided.
The sanctimonious smugness of that we'll see that Wyn delivers. That was great. That was so familiar to me with my religious upbringing. It just made me smile when I saw that. Yep, I know that attitude. I liked the way Sisko was appealing to the Bajorans, the way he brought up how they work together.
Yeah.
I like how ethically he didn't bring up the fact he's the emissary or play off that. I've got to admit, in that situation, I would be tempted to play that card. But he seems very reluctant to do it. And I think that speaks for his character, that he isn't like Wyn. He's not doing what Wyn's doing. Wyn's exploiting her position for politics and exploiting the Bajoran's faith.
You mean you would say something like, the prophet spoke directly to me?
Yes. Have they spoken to you directly?
Yeah, but she could just say yes.
I could see her doing that. But I like the way he avoided doing that and instead went with his approach of appealing to the Bajorans and how they've got to know each other.
In ops, Sisko comes up the elevator, and we seem to have everyone back at work again. He asks Miles about Keiko, and he says, she's shaken up, but she's going to hold classes in one of the cargo bays tomorrow. Sisko smiles and says, Jake will be there, on time. Miles says that will make her feel better.
Doesn't Jake get any say in this? I mean, perhaps he doesn't want to get blown up by religious fanatics.
Well, the religious fanatics won't care anymore because none of the Bajorans will be there.
Yeah, exactly. So you can kill the Federation children without any harm coming to the Bajorans.
Oh, Lord. That's scary. Maybe we can up security in the cargo bay.
That would be a good idea.
I do like how, so far consistently on this show, the worse things get, the more confident Sisko appears in his own plan and his own stance. That's a unique strength.
Yeah. Well, I think because he's a focused character.
Yeah.
And he thrives in the face of adversity. And you're right, that does seem to be a consistent characteristic.
Right.
He is the, oh yeah, it's all bad now, but we can work through this. And
right.
That's a very Star Trek thing as well.
Yeah. Sisko asks if Miles found anything new on Akino, just as Neela saunters by slowly looking at them.
Oh.
Yeah. Miles tells him about the security bypass module he found on runabout pad A. I'm surprised that Sisko doesn't say, another one? Yeah. Could we maybe just scan for these things, like, constantly and go and remove them?
We have things to implement on the station. One,
yes.
Evacuation plan. Two, scan every day. Three, the RFID tags implanted into all the Starfleet people.
Miles tells him somebody was probably trying to steal a runabout, so he's put a security seal on all three pads and is checking for other anomalies. First of all, how did he do that without his tool? Did he get another tool? I don't know. And secondly, Neela is listening in the background and she has heard this entire conversation.
Yeah, he should probably also check on Bashir, because last time somebody stole one, it was Bashir.
That's true. Oh my gosh. Dax tells Sisko that Vedic Barile is calling from a Bajoran transport. They put it on screen and Barile says he decided to accept his gracious invitation for a tour of the station, which, again, when did that happen? Sisko kind of goes, yeah, sure. No problem. But we've had some damage on the promenade that we won't have time to clean up before your arrival. Neela is in frame again. She's dangerously close to the action all of a sudden. Barile says he heard about the situation and says maybe he can help clean it up. And Sisko says, well, that would be very much appreciated. It's the least a friend can do, Barile says. So he's changed his tone a bit, but maybe he also sees a political advantage to be had at this point.
Yeah.
We go back down to the chapel, and now Neela enters. Evil Wyn looks a little annoyed, and she quietly says, my dear, you should not be here. She tells the Vedic that they found out about the runabout, and now she has no way to escape. If she goes through with this now, she'll be caught and executed. Evil Wyn takes her hand in hers and says, the sacrifices the prophets call on us to make are great, sometimes, my dear, but the rewards they give will last an eternity. Oh, she is... Oh, nasty.
Yes, she's getting her followers to do the dirty work because God told her to tell
them. That's right. And the prophets will reward you. They won't punish me, but they'll reward you. No problem.
Yeah, that is just low. Oh, just nasty.
Yeah, it's bad. We go back to Ops and Miles is swearing at the computer, because that happens too in pretty much every episode. He's discovered a sub-program labeled ANA, which the computer says is protected by a personal access code. When he asks on whose authority, the computer says, Chief of Operations, Miles O'Brien. He tells Dax that he has to do some manual thing to get access to this anomalous file. And he and Dax start trying to break into this program.
It's nice that Dax gets to do something in this episode, finally.
She's pretty much been sitting at her console and that's it.
She's actually been playing Tetris this whole time.
Maybe this is one of those doghouse programs that they forgot about.
Oh, dear.
Vedic Barile walks onto the promenade with Sisko and Kira as people clamor to see him and come into contact with him. Odo is trying to push people out of the way as he's kissing babies and shaking hands like a politician.
Did you notice how Morn was right at the very front?
I did see that, yes.
And he got to shake his hand.
Yeah.
Another slightly amusing thing in this scene is if you actually watch Morn, you see him sort of back up and then some hands guide him like out of the scene,
right.
Out of frame.
Like his handlers because he can't see in his costume. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
That was funny. We also see that Neela is standing up on the second level above the commotion. She's holding some kind of case.
You know something bad's going to happen when she's just standing up on the higher level, just watching what's going on.
Back in Ops, Miles and Dax have broken into the sub-program. They find that the file seems to create an escape route from the promenade to runabout pad A by dropping force fields. Then they ask the computer to run a level 3 sensor sweep of the promenade, and it finds an anomalous reading. A subspace relay was activated in the security office 9 minutes and 7 seconds ago.
Uh-oh. Is Vantika back?
Miles says he's heading down there while Dax runs diagnostics on the other security systems. Outside of the chapel, the crowd still clamoring around him. Vedic Barile arrives to find Evil Wyn. She reaches for his ear, saying, I expected you sooner, Barile. He stops her hand. Somebody finally stopped someone from touching their ear. That was my favorite moment. In the episode.
And he grabs her hand and like holds it. I was like, nice touch.
And she seems a little irked too by that.
I fear she has been politically outmaneuvered.
He says, it seems our paths have grown apart. Perhaps we can bring them together again. She says she'd like nothing better than that. Come with me to the school and let's both show our commitment to a peaceful resolution to this series of events. Of course, she says. And they walk toward the school with the whole crowd, including Neela, behind them.
Oh, definitely. She has been completely outmaneuvered by a better player at politics.
Yeah, but at the same time, this is what she wanted.
Oh, well.
Miles arrives in the security office with his tricorder and starts scanning around. Eventually, he finds the subspace device in the same panel he was working on earlier in the episode with Neela. Uh-oh. He calls Dax and tells her. We always jump back and forth so many times. We have little short scenes at the end of these episodes. It gets really manic. Because now we're back at the school.
He looks very disappointed, though.
Yeah, he liked Neela.
I mean, the woman he was about to leave his wife and child for is carrying out a sabotage and setting up an escape route.
No, I think instead he was just like, oh, I could finally delegate some work to someone, but she turned out to be evil. Dang.
Well, you take your interpretation. I'm sticking with mine.
Fine. We've arrived at the school, and the Vedics are standing in the destroyed entryway with Kira and Sisko behind them. Barile starts talking to the crowd, saying, looking around at your faces, I believe you feel the shame I feel at this sight. Miles and Dax are discussing that it looks like the weapons detectors have been impacted, even though they appear to be fully functional. Yeah, Miles said, but she's good, so she can make it look like they're functional when they're not. So now we know it's Neela, and we know she's disabled the weapons detectors, and we haven't told Odo. We're not paying attention to the fact that there's a large crowd that's formed on the promenade. Come on, people, move faster. Finally, he does call Sisko, who steps out of the crowd and into the destroyed school to answer the call. Miles says he's not entirely sure, but he thinks the weapon detectors on the promenade have been disabled. He says Neela may have done it. And he's like, your assistant? Barile is talking to the crowd about rejecting violence. The crowd is really cheering. And we see Keiko is standing behind them with her arms crossed, looking unimpressed. Although she does clap when everybody claps.
Yes.
Sisko comes out of the rubble and looks at the crowd, scanning for Neela.
I think there was some great nonverbal communication here. When you see Sisko walk out from right to left, he's looking straight at Kira, and she immediately seems to pick up on something, because you see her whole expression change and her like eyes widen, and she's like, something's up. I thought that was really interesting.
I didn't even notice that, but I mean, what would he have communicated to her? I guess just pay attention.
Yeah, just that something was wrong.
Yeah.
And I thought it was a nice touch, because it showed what's one of the things that we've been talking about in this episode is trying to bring the Federation and Bajor onto a similar level.
Yeah.
That she could pick up on the signals from Sisko that something was wrong. I think he still should have probably told her, but
yeah. Or should have shouted or done something. I don't know. Well, he eventually does see Neela sneaking around. And then we go into slow-mo, which is really not called for on this show because everything is always in slow motion.
Don't forget the dramatic music.
Oh, man. She reaches into her case and pulls out a phaser. Sisko shouts, no, and runs into the crowd. And everyone is getting pushed around. So her arm gets hit as she fires. I think she's firing at Barile, and she misses. And then Sisko does like a full-on slow-motion dive, taking her down. Phaser goes off again. Somehow, in this massive crowd, she doesn't hit anyone. I have no idea how that happened. Odo arrives and grabs her, dragging her away, and she starts shouting, the prophet spoke, I answered their call, and she says that multiple times.
Sisko's pretty brave here, jumping at somebody actively firing a phaser.
Yeah. Kira looks at Sisko with an open mouth. I can't decide if she's shocked about Neela or about that dramatic dive.
It could be either, but the way she stands there and then turns and gives that look at Wynn.
Yeah.
That was like, oh.
She's suddenly very angry.
Yes.
And she stomps over to evil Wynn and she grabs her arm. It was all to get him here, wasn't it? She figured that out fast.
Yeah, that was pretty quick. She went from she respects Wynn to, wait a minute, she was trying to assassinate someone.
Right. She said, you did all of this to get him out of the monastery to stop him from becoming Kai. Evil Wynn pulls her arm away and leaves, not answering the accusation, not even acknowledging it. She seems a little surprised somebody figured it out so quickly.
Yeah.
Did you notice that there was a guy standing next to Sisko who looked like he was just in normal street clothes? I wondered if he wandered onto the set and into the crowd.
Oh.
He's just like wearing pants and a belt. And I was like, that is not a Starfleet costume for the 90s.
Maybe they ran out of extras and started pulling some of the crew on. We need a bigger crowd scene.
I backed up and watched that dive 3 times. It was hilarious.
It was pretty funny. I liked that.
I didn't dislike it. I thought it was funny.
I liked seeing Sisko do the hero bit.
Now we go to Ops, and Kira is sitting by herself in the dark. She's reflecting on events when Sisko comes in. Neela insisted she acted alone, unless you want to consider the Prophet's co-conspirators. Kira just sighs.
Oh, that kind of annoyed me. I mean, Sisko makes a joke about the Prophets being co-conspirators. I didn't think that would fit at all. I mean, he's being flippant about deeply held religious beliefs. That would at best be very, very tactless.
That's true. This seems like something more that, like what I would say. Sometimes I love it when we switch roles. Because I guess I look at this like, it's late at night. She's sitting there by herself in the dark.
Yeah.
They're probably exhausted. It's been a terrible day. They had the bomb go off. Then they had all this other stuff happen. And they had the assassination attempt. I mean, this was probably a really long day. They maybe haven't slept in 20 hours or more.
Very true.
And so I was looking at that like, it's a thing you might say when you're just sort of exasperated by the whole thing, like, unless you consider the Prophet's co-conspirators, you know, kind of like that. I didn't take it as snarky. I took it more as just exhausting and not satisfying.
Oh, okay. I see what you're saying there.
Kira sighs at this. She'll never tell us the truth, she says. We'll never be able to prove that Wynn was involved. And Sisko asks if she's okay, and she kind of laughs. I've forgotten okay. I haven't seen okay in what seems like years.
Well, that sums it up for pretty much everyone right now.
In the pandemic?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, God. We try so hard, people, to keep that out of this podcast because nobody wants to talk about that. We're all living it every day, but oy. She says, I was just sitting here thinking that last year at this time, I was fighting the Cardassians in some nameless swamp. And if you stopped and told me 1 year later, they'd be gone and I'd be in uniform up here protecting a wormhole, protecting your celestial temple, Sisko corrects her.
Now that's more like the Sisko I would expect.
But even there, she doesn't really kind of take the bait on that. She, you know, she's not even having complete thoughts. She never really finishes even the sentence that she started. That's what I mean. I just feel like they're tired and it's just, ugh, this day.
That's true.
She says, I envied Vedic Wynn because she was a true believer. I wanted my faith to be as strong as hers. Maybe it is, Sisko says. I've got a report to put together for Starfleet and you should get some rest. Kira says, I'd rather help you. I heard what you said to Vedic Wynn at the school. I just wanted you to know you were right, what you said about the Bajorans, at least about me. I don't think you're the devil. And then they both smile. Well, maybe we've made some progress after all, Sisko says. And they head into the office together. The end.
What a great ending.
Okay. That's the end of the episode and of the season. What's your overanalysis of this episode?
For a start, Bajoran religious politics seems to resemble something more akin to the Borgias for their murderousness and their religio-political maneuvering. Wynn truly is awful. And I also like Beryl, who seems to have a more progressive, less dogmatic approach. The other thing, this to me felt very much like a true Star Trek allegory episode. Perhaps clunky in some of the ways, but that's sort of typical. It's telling a message about separation of church and state, about religious tolerance, and it's doing it in, I thought, a very Star Trek kind of way. I like that. I mean, I thought that was a good nod to classic Trek. And also, to address a point about how Kira seems to be making a lot of the same mistakes, she just talked about how a year earlier she was in combat against the Cardassians in a nameless swamp. So everything is moving very quickly. So you've got a hard learning curve here, as well as just the environment changing so much so quickly.
Right.
So I can kind of forgive her behavior, the way she's reacting to things, just because of the pace of change would be overwhelming. Mm. I did like the sort of the crisis of conscience of going from admiring the faith of Wynn to just seeing how it was a cover for absolute ruthless ambition. Nicely done.
She jumped to that conclusion so quickly.
Yeah.
I would think she would have at least had a few minutes of, that can't be right. But she dove right in and ran right over to her and was like, hey, you just tried to kill that person.
Well, maybe she was having these doubts already.
Maybe.
Seeing how Wynn was manipulating this situation and the things she was saying, and it was already, the ideas were solidifying in her mind that, you know, maybe Wynn isn't the character I thought she was.
Right.
It's also funny because it's strange how seemingly relevant this episode still is today.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Yeah.
Both the political part of it and the non-political part of it
Yeah.
feels very relevant. You know, honestly, this is probably the most modern feeling episode of all of them.
Oh, I think you're right. Yeah, I would agree with that.
Interesting. There were a lot of Star Trek elements in this episode
yeah.
because there was this certainly the thing of hope at the end.
The very much the positive coming from Sisko.
They talked about science and tolerance and getting along with others. Those are all things that are very Star Trek-y. And the real battles apparently were between the non-humans and the Bajorans, who I think we're still establishing, I guess, of where they are along in their evolution scale, but it seems like they're maybe a bit behind, at least the humans. And so it would make sense that they would be having some of the things that we used to have and, you know, and maybe don't have anymore.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that technologically they seem quite advanced, but they still have a lot of historical baggage, if you
right.
like.
Right. But I think as a people, having gone through the persecutions that they went through, I think a lot of this sort of stuff would be a struggle. Of getting to the point of tolerance just among themselves is going to be a challenge, but then being able to tolerate people from the outside could be close to impossible for quite a while.
Yeah. I think that ends it for my overanalysis.
Well, I have a couple of things for this category. First of all, I think it's sad that Ensign Aquino was only a pile of goo. He didn't even have a face. We never saw what he looked like. I thought that was sad.
Oh.
And what did O'Brien learn in this episode? Don't trust anyone to do any of the work. You still have to do it all yourself, and delegation is bad. I hate that that's his lesson. That sucks.
Don't trust those sneaky Bajorans. That's all I can say.
Oh, man. In lavender uniforms. But no, really, my question is, do you think that Evil Wyn was trying to do more harm than she did? Like in that explosion, which I assume Evil Neela did.
Yeah.
Had she intended to harm Keiko or to kill Keiko?
Actually, I'm not sure. I think she probably didn't care. Killing O'Brien's wife might have actually caused the same effect of bringing Beryl to the station.
Yeah.
I will go with, I don't think she cared. I think that it probably was luck that Keiko wasn't killed.
Maybe we'll learn more later, but it's possible that she had a bigger agenda. You know, I don't know this because from here, I have not seen anything going forward. So I don't know anything about what happens. But what I do know is that this character comes back. And I know because when I looked her up to see the name of the actress and look at her history and whatever, I saw that she had a different costume on in a picture. So I know she's coming back. But that's all I know. I don't know anything else. Maybe she had some other bigger agenda, like trying to get the Federation out of there or trying to make some other big splash.
Yeah.
So that's why I wondered if she was, you know, really trying to harm someone. And in the end, she didn't hurt anybody. But it also, because no one was hurt, it kind of makes sense that maybe that was the goal, too, was just to use a little scare tactic and not hurt anyone.
Well, in theory, if you expanded upon that, and I like your idea here, there could have been two phases to this. The first one is she blows up the school and she kills Keiko and whoever children there. Huge outrage. I mean, that would be terrible. Beryl comes to the station and the bomber, Neela, kills him. Wyn could then act as the peacemaker of, look at this terrible thing. You know, we must come together and give this impression of being the reasonable one, the one who just cares about the religion and look at all this conflict, while getting rid of her main rival, and would probably get her a lot of support with the other Vedics and get elected that way. So she could use it both situations to her advantage. True. She is utterly ruthless to become the next Kai.
That is so scary. She's willing to exploit her own people in order to gain power. And that is not a very spiritual act, but instead just a power play and a play of greed. And that does not bode well for the future of Bajor. I guess that's all I have to say about that.
Well, you know, historically, we've seen that exact situation played out.
True. Okay, so that's it for your overanalysis?
That is it.
So if we move to women in the future, at least there were some women in this episode, so I have a few things to say. I'm fine with women being villains. Why not? Great. Evil Wyn, she was scary, and she nailed that performance, and I'm very impressed with her.
Great performance. I mean, seriously.
I was afraid of her from beginning to end, and I'm still afraid of her. I'm scared that she's coming back, because, she freaks me out. So anyway, that was great. I don't like this implication that Neela had some kind of untoward feelings towards Miles. I mean, ultimately, she was a murderous zealot, but there was zero indication of her having any kind of feelings. And it was just an annoying stereotype that I think we could have done better. It bugged me.
So you don't think the possibility that she was trying to throw Miles off by appearing friendlier than she was?
I think that's a generous interpretation. And If so, great. That's more positive, I guess, because I would rather they portrayed her as sort of undermining and villainous than having puppy dog eyes for Miles, because that's a more mature interpretation. So I guess I would rather she were, you know, doing that than the way that I was seeing it. Maybe I was being overly sensitive to it.
Uh-huh.
But from my point of view, she just was happy to be treated like an engineer and have her work respected. Perhaps I am overly sensitive because of the way they treat Dax all the time. And that has clouded my judgment. So if we go with your judgment, that's much more positive, even though it's negative. It's confusing, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So yeah, if we go with your way of looking at it, that's much better.
It makes her a better villain.
True.
Not only is she murderous and a complete zealot, she's also manipulative.
That's true. She's a more well-rounded villain. And I'm not thrilled with the portrayal of Keiko. I mean, I'm very good with her conviction of wanting to teach science and not be strong-armed into something else. But when dealing with people from all over, you know, with different beliefs and cultures and languages and histories, you'd have to learn to at least appear flexible, to use more inclusive speech and try to negotiate your way through things instead of just immediately saying no and I'm trying to teach pure science and your way is wrong. That just made her even more, I thought, one-dimensional. And she seemed more like just a hammer instead of a more useful tool.
But I think they were only wanting that cardboard cutout. The anti-Win, as it were. Win's the religious zealot, and Keiko is the devout atheist.
Sure, and I would accept that if this had been the only time or the first time that Keiko had appeared.
Yeah.
But instead, I feel like we drop her in just to get annoyed at her. And I've seen a lot of hate towards the character of Keiko, and I've never really understood it, but mostly because I only ever saw her on Next Gen, which was, a couple of appearances, and she didn't have a lot to do. And obviously, you only see her here a few times, but so far, she's been pretty unpleasant. And not because I think that she's an unpleasant character, but because they just drop her in to do these little stereotypical things, and she's only got a couple of scenes or a couple of lines, and they don't give her enough nuance. And I'm always very opposed to characters that lack nuance because it's not realistic.
Right. She's being basically used as a prop.
Right.
We're going to use her for this purpose in this story rather than developing a character.
Yeah. Oh, we're going to show a little conflict with Miles, right, coming here. And so we're going to make her yell at him that, oh my God, you made me come here. And it's like, meh, that's not impressive. They could have done better.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's the women in the future section. So they could have done better with this woman character. And then I also felt like, even though I really liked the end of the episode, I did think it was a little bit of a step backwards for Kira. We made a bunch of steps forward, you know, in progress and in battle lines, and made all these strides for her. And then she just kind of went, oh, Bajorans are different. So maybe they need their own school. I think she should have learned by now to have a better approach in the way that she was going to bring those things to Sisko.
But do you think that can be excused with the fact this is somebody who's transitioned from a highly competent combat role into now she's becoming the politician?
That's true. Yeah. And I guess it's legitimate to figure that it would take her a while to learn that lesson and she'd have to stumble along the way a few times before she got there. But at the same time, when I have to keep telling a person over and over and over the same things, I find it so frustrating. And maybe that's what's getting me here, is I feel like, how many times is she going to have to learn that same lesson? But it is a little unrealistic to think that if it's only been a year since she stepped from, as she said, the swamp to this political position, maybe it's too much to ask that she would have already kind of gotten past a bunch of these things. Okay, I can take that. That's a pretty good argument. Okay, I think we've reached the end of this section, so let's do rating. So thumbs up, thumbs down, or neutral. What is your rating of this episode?
Absolute thumbs up. Great episode. I like the themes in it. I thought they progressed the characters along.
Yep.
After how up and down, what a roller coaster ride it's been since the start of the season. It's great to end it with an episode you can really point at and say, that was a good one.
Yeah. I also give it a thumbs up. I thought it was a pretty strong episode. I liked the bit of hopefulness at the end. I mean, it was mixed in with something pretty negative when Kira said, oh my gosh, we'll never be able to pin this on Evil Win. But at the same time, you recognize that she's a team finally with Sisko, and she feels like, you know, she's in it with him and he's in it with her. So that's a plus. The only thing I will say is there's something about this show, and I think it's really heavily on display in this episode, which is that it rarely feels hopeful. It is a weirdly kind of dark show for being Star Trek, at least to me. I'm used to something a little bit, I think, lighter. I don't know. I struggle with that with this show. It just has a darkness to it that I find a little troubling.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess we can talk about that more in our summary episode.
Yes, which will be coming up.
Yes, so we've reached the end of season one, and so next week our plan is to have a mailbag episode and then also a season wrap-up where we will talk about our ratings for all of the episodes within the season and give them a ranking. And then after that, we will start in on season two.
Hooray!
Okay, in the meantime, if you would like to tell us your own overanalysis of this or any episode, or if you just want to say something nice, please email us at rebingeit@gmail.com or tweet us at rebingeit. Also, check us out on talkthroughmedia.com. You can leave feedback for us there and listen to all of our other awesome podcasts.
Thanks for joining us on the Rebinge Deep Space Nine podcast.
That's it for me.
And that's it for me.